So we're just reading a little bit from the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. Other temples were homes away from home, said Prabhupada. But Vrindavan was home. Those who wished to live there with him, however, had to pass the test of his constant scrutiny and sharp criticism. They had to accept the hard work and austerity, and special austerities meant special blessings. When a devotee asked to be excused from his duties in Vrindavan to operate a farm in the West, Prabhupada said that even opening 20 farms would not be as important as remaining in Vrindavan. Those who persevered eventually began to see all difficulties as nectar, as had been expressed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. When difficulties arise in service, I find them sources of happiness. On Radhastami, Srila Prabhupada laid the cornerstone for a large Gurukul building adjacent to the Krishna Balaram Mandir. He said that when it was built, the devotees should accommodate 500 students there from all over the world. Though through the gorgeous temple, the guest house, and soon the Gurukul, Srila Prabhupada intended to draw as many people as possible to the shelter of Krishna in Vrindavan. For this end, he was willing to sacrifice everything, even his peaceful writing. And for this end, he also demanded his disciples to sacrifice. So now, when Prabhupada began the development of the project in Vrindavan, the land used to be quite separated from the rest of the town, because Vrindavan at that time basically would stop about a kilometer before the Krishna Balaram Mandir. So it was a little bit on the outside of Vrindavan. For those who know Vrindavan a little bit, it was near Fogla Ashram. The Bhakti Ashram was the last ashram. You have Fogla Ashram, then you have Bhakti Ashram, and then you have Krishna Balaram Mandir, and really stopped at the Bhakti Ashram. And then there were a few houses, but there wasn't really anything going on there. So that land was considered outside of Vrindavan. And people were even saying, like, why would you want to build a temple in such an isolated place? But Prabhupada said that, no, Lord Balaram is very powerful. And he will bring people. Right? Now, these days, what has happened is Vrindavan has grown, and now the temple has become part of the town of Vrindavan, and it's just the amount of people that come are like just, it's just too much. It's just overwhelming, right? In Kartik, which is the month of Damodar, that is the time of October, November, the month dedicated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was tied with a rope by his mother, right? That month is now just too much. It's just inconceivable how many people come, and it's practically impossible to celebrate the festival properly. Right? It's just an ocean of people. So Prabhupada, at the time when Prabhupada was present, devotees were saying, like, but how will we ever fill up this guest house? And we're building such a big guest house. How will we ever fill it up? Now it's always booked, full, right? Not only that guest house, now the other, the MVT, which is much bigger, is also always booked. And we're still talking about the need for more guest house facility, and devotees are staying everywhere, all over the Dham. So what can we say? It is like that, very, things have changed so much. But when Prabhupada was there, there was a central focus. There was like one person and everyone looked at him. And in that way, whatever he wanted, everyone was ready to do it. And some more than others. But those who were most eager to please him, they were also the ones who were right at the core. They were the core group, right? So in this way, things were very different. Now, so many people are coming to the Holy Dham, but senior devotees who are involved in Vrindavan Dham are discussing this topic regularly, right? Like the lack of a central focus, because everyone comes and in his own way tries to connect with Krishna. Some will go to Govardhan, some will go to Radhakund, some will go to Jatigram, and some will go to Surya Kunj, and some will go to Javat, and they'll stay there, right? Some stay in Gokul. So like that, devotees now stay in all kinds of places. And when they come to the Holy Dham now, everyone in his own way is trying to connect with Krishna. But for me, one particular book written by Satsarup Maharaj in regard about Vrindavan was very significant, and that is his Samadhi Diary. Right? In this Samadhi Diary, Satsarup Maharaj is describing that to him, the holiest places in Vrindavan, right, the holiest place is not Radhakund, right? Although scriptures are saying that the topmost place in the universe is Radhakund. But still, that is not the holiest place for it. Maybe the topmost place in the universe, but not the holiest place. He's saying that the Samadhi of Srila Prabhupada is the holy place, the most holy place, and Prabhupada's house. Now, this is like, you know, nectar to my ears, I must say, because when I saw that book, it was exactly my experience all these years, because somehow or other, I went probably less on parikrama than many of you, right? Although I lived in Vrindavan so many years, I've probably been in less places than many of you, because somehow or other, I always got busy in the temple, and I was satisfied with that. I was always busy in the Krishna Balaram Mandir, and then I didn't mind that so much. And then sometimes the devotees would come and tell me, but today is a very special darshan, you have to go. I said, but there's so much to do here, maybe I should just stay here. Come on. And then I went on the special darshan, and I went all around Vrindavan, around all the temples, and I saw that the local leaders of those temples, they were on the altar with their deities on that day, making like special arrangements for their deities, and then so many people would come. So I was thinking, and that's what I should be doing, you know, I should be on our altar, and I should be making special arrangements for our deities. What am I doing? Running all over Vrindavan. I should stay and serve Krishna simply. So this Samadhi Diary symbolizes the mood of serving, right, in the Holy Dham, of serving Krishna in the Holy Dham, rather than trying to enjoy the Holy Dham. See, India is one thing, but the Holy Dham is something else. One may like India, yes, that can be. India chalega, it is okay, but Holy Dham is something else. Then who wants to go to India after the Holy Dham? We have to cross through India quickly, right? Quickly, as efficient as possible, right? You just kind of go right through India, you know, to all the pun that is being spit in corners, through all the crazy traffic, right, that is going on, where sometimes there are two lanes at opposite traffic, and you're driving, and in both lanes, a truck is coming at you. And you're looking like, and you just go off the road hoping that there's not going to be a big hole, right? Anyway, what can we say? But Vrindavan is different, because it's a spiritual place. It is the spiritual world. So this is quite amazing, because it is said, just to throw up some contradictions here for Gauranga, which are things he has, of course, spoken about many times and thought about many times, but just to kind of throw fuel on old fires. Right? How is it possible that the spiritual world, which is described as the tripat vibhuti, right, or three quarters of the total of whatever is manifested, how is it that the tripat vibhuti can be manifested in the ekapat vibhuti, in the one quarter of the... So in other words, the three quarters of the spiritual world is manifested in the one quarter of the material world. So that doesn't make sense. And how can the... And then to make it even worse, how can the unlimited spiritual world... how can the unlimited spiritual world actually possibly even be measured as three quarters? Huh? If there's no limit to the spiritual world, how can you even say it's three quarters of the material world? That limits it. Yeah? So, you know, we're having here 84 krosas. You know, 84 krosas. So here in only 84 krosas, yes, it's like whatever, 45 or 84 square miles, right? There we are. The entire three quarters of the whole spiritual world is manifested in a little corner. And it's fully there. It's fully. The whole spiritual world is manifested in that Vrindavan. Shall we open up the discussion right now? Just sink our teeth in it. Gauranga, what do you think? Let's do it. I mean, this is, isn't this an outrageous part of our philosophy? What do you think? Yeah, but that's a nice footnote, right? But that doesn't do anything about the fundamental issues.
Is it maybe that there's like a doorway available where there's an entry connection to the spiritual world and remains as it is?
No. It's not a doorway. It is the spiritual world. There's no difference between Boma Vrindavan and Golok Vrindavan. Boma means on this earth, and the spiritual, it's the same. There's absolutely no difference. The whole entire spiritual world is there. It's not a sample. It's not a gateway. It's not just like a little corner of the which is a little replica, mini replica of the spiritual world, you know, so you can kind of get a taste. Like the Disney World in Paris, you know, which is like just a little replica, a little corner of the real Disney World in Orlando. No, it's not like that. It's non-different.
But the spiritual world is simultaneously, just to put some more fuel on fire.
Yeah, Gauranga.
It's simultaneously all-pervading.
Hey, it's simultaneously all-pervading. Okay. But it's then covered, it's covered by the illusory energy. But it is not, that is not the fact the same. It's like, it is said that Brahmana Pratistaham. So that particular point that the spiritual world is all pervading is meaning that everything rests on the Brahma Jyoti, right? So everything rests on the Brahma Jyoti, that's fine. So actually, everything rests on Brahman, so it is all spiritual in that sense. But Golok is only there in Boma Vrindavan. No, Golok is only Golok. Yeah. It's an interesting proposal, Dr. Frog. Don't mind, you know. It's like, it's just like, This is not, we're not getting personal. I mean, we're just on, staying on the philosophical platform, you know, so. Huh? Yeah, yeah. Certainly Dr. Frog comes up with some good guesses at times. The story of Dr. Frog is that Dr. Frog was living in a small well. Another frog came and thought that, told him about the ocean. Dr. Frog said, the ocean, the ocean. Yes, he said, the other frog said, yes, the ocean is like a body of water. He said, oh, just like my well. He said, no, it's bigger than your well. You mean bigger than my well? And he, as he said, bigger, 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 so much bigger. And then eventually he just blew himself up, you know, like he became bigger and bigger. The point was that he tried to explain the greater reality by the know-how from his own limited little world. That was his fault. This is Kupa Mandukanyaya, the logic of the frog. And Prabhupada called it Dr. Frog. So Gauranga just came up with a Dr. Frog proposal to this spiritual world, talking about dimensions. The bottom line is that the spiritual world is unlimited, and so is Vrindavan. It is unlimited. Bhoma Vrindavan is also unlimited. It can just not be perceived because of the yoga maya layer that covers it and makes it look like an Indian village and in an Indian district and so on, but it is not. It is the spiritual world. So this is quite amazing. And it says that, to make it even more shocking, that these places are eternal, right? So, you know, you drive into Vrindavan in your old Indian car, and you're thinking, this is eternal, this place. So, what to think about that? Does that mean, Gauranga, when the whole universe is annihilated, etc., that there's just a little chunk still flying, and that the Brijbasis are still walking around there, you know? Radhe, radhe. Yeah? Riksha, riksha. And if you just happen to be there, you know, that eternally the rickshaws keep on driving there and the hawks are still in the street. Then where does it go? Does it merge with the other one? So these things are... These things are describing the nature of the Holy Dham. And therefore, it is said that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So not only Vrindavan is eternal, but Krishna is eternally performing his pastimes there. And it is for that reason that Vrindavan was Prabhupada's home. Prabhupada said, Vrindavan, my home, Mayapur, my place of worship, Bombay, my office. So some devotees might say, well, in my case, you know, Amsterdam, my home, and right? Amsterdam, my home, well, Radhadish, my place of worship, right? And you know, what's the office, right? The Hague, the office, right? You know, something like that. You know, some might say like that, but no, that's not the fact. Vrindavan is also our home, right? So it's the same for everyone. It's everybody's home. So why is Vrindavan everybody's home? Very simple, because Krishna lives there. And any devotee naturally wants to live where Krishna lives. So Vrindavan is home. And Mayapur is everyone's place of worship. Right? Because there, we're worshipping specifically our Istadev, our worshipable deity, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There may be many manifestations of Krishna or of Vishnu, in different points in time, but we are not worshipping. We are not, we are sometimes remembering Matsya Avatar, right? But we are not daily doing Matsya Puja, Matsya is the fish incarnation of the Lord. So we are not regularly worshipping that incarnation of the Lord. This fish was found in the pond of a king, in a garden of the king. And the king came in his garden, found this fish in his pond, and the fish said, spoke to him. And he said, help, take me out of here. It's very dangerous. There are many, many dangerous big animals and aquatics that are after me and want me to, that try to eat me here. And you are the king. You are responsible to protect all living beings in your kingdom, and I'm in your kingdom, and therefore I seek your protection. So the king goes, oh my God, a talking fish, right? And not only that, you know, a talking fish who demands protection. What am I going to do now, you know? And I mean, it's my duty as a king to protect him. Because that's how it was. And Prabhupada pointed that out in Mayapur. When the managers were walking around in Mayapur and there were some yellow plants, Prabhupada said, you have to look after praja. That is praja. Praja means whatever has taken birth that you have to protect. That is your duty. So the king had to protect praja, whatever had taken birth. So, yeah, you know, yeah, this is your duty. If there is a, your management goes a little further than you thought. Anyway, so this fish then was placed by the king in a bowl, right? But then the fish grew in size and said, take me out, this is not suitable, this is too small, I don't fit. And so the king arranged for the fish to be put in a bigger water body, and again that fish grew in size and said, but this is too small, how do I fit here? So many men had to move him to a bigger water body, and he kept on growing until finally the whole army had to be mobilized to somehow or other move this huge fish to the ocean. Right? And then this fish took such a big form. And then the king began to understand. This is not an ordinary fish. Nobody has this power. This is not a fish. What I'm seeing here is not a fish. This is the Supreme Lord. So in South Indian temples, they still have worship in Udupi, where on these days, on the appearance day of Matsya Avatar, that they are putting a fish tail on Krishna, on the deity of Krishna. Yeah? A silver fish tail they're still putting on, right? To remember that he's also Lord Matsya. So this is bona fide, because it is a fact that all the different incarnations are included within Krishna. But we are worshipping Krishna. Right. But then it is said, Nitai Padabhinabhai Radha Krishna Paitanai. Without the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, you will never be able to approach Radha and Krishna. So it is stated by Narottam Das Thakur. So we are specifically approaching Lord Krishna to Gornitai, who are non-different from Krishna and Balaram. One day, Mother Sachi, who was worshipping the deities of Krishna and Balaram, and every day was making arrangements for a nice offering to her deities, one night she was dreaming. And in the night, her son Nimai, together with Nityananda, were fighting with the deities over the offering. And Nimai and Nitai, they told the deities, get out of here. This offering is ours. It's not yours. Get out of here. This is our yuga. You know, you were from the previous yuga. Get out of here. Huh? This offering is ours. Right? So there was a big fight about the offering. Right? And Mother Sachi just woke up and think, what a strange dream that Nimai was fighting with the deities. What a strange dream. Right? And then the next day, Lord Chaitanya, Nimai, and Nityananda came for lunch. Right? And when they both sat down, suddenly she remembered the fight, and suddenly she realized that they were non-different from Krishna and Balaram. And she was so shocked, she fainted. But this is a fact. And Srila Prabhupada wrote in one letter that the reason why he installed the Krishna Balaram deities in Vrindavan as the principal deities of the temple was because these deities are non-different. They are non-different from Gaur Nitai. And that without Gaur Nitai, we cannot have the entrance into Vrindavan. And that therefore, the principal deities are Krishna Balaram on the main altar and not Radha Shyamasundara, who are on the side altar. So, like this, Srila Prabhupada established the Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan, which is the most important temple in Vrindavan. Because in that temple, the emphasis is placed on the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In that temple, the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are being established. And therefore, in that temple, the process for us to attain Radha and Krishna. That does not mean that the residents of Vrindavan are all missing the boat, and that from this day on we should be walking around thinking, shh, they're all on a lower level, right? No. Prabhupada explained that the residents of Vrindavan, they have had such a connection with Krishna and in devotional service in previous lives, that in this lifetime, Krishna directly has become their spiritual master. Krishna personally acts as their spiritual master. And therefore, it is not recommended that one gets very closely connected with the residents of the Holy Dham, but rather that one stays respectful, but keeps some distance because they follow a different process. We cannot imitate the process that is followed by the residents of Vrindavan. Of course, there may be also many Mayavadis in the Holy Dham. That is a well-known fact, and it is stated like that, and that therefore the Yamuna is leaving Vrindavan and is disappearing more and more and more. The Yamuna is moving away from Vrindavan very rapidly. And also the water level is going down because the Yamuna is withdrawing. And as more and more Mayavadis settle, the more the Yamuna will go. And now the Mayavadis are chanting with their loudspeakers, their Mayavadi mantras, on the banks of the Yamuna to help the departure of the Yamuna even a little more. What can be done? It is the nature of the age of Kali, where it is said that the Holy Dham of Vrindavan will become less and less manifest, and the Holy Dham of Sridham Mayapur will become more and more manifest. Of course, there's no difference between Mayapur and Vrindavan in the absolute sense. Anyway, so these are some of the considerations in regards to the Dham. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur made the point that Sri Dham is the natural resting place of Sri Nam, and that without Sri Dham one cannot realize the full purport of Sri Nam. So that is very interesting. He's saying that the holy name is by nature at home in Vrindavan, and that without that connection with Vrindavan and Mayapur, without connection with the holy name, with the holy Dham, one cannot actually realize the full purport of the holy name. So this is really a very significant statement. Because the holy Dham is the manifestation of the holy name. It is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is manifesting the holy Dham. After all, Krishna is there, and Balaram is there, And Hare, the Ladini Shakti, Srimati Radharani is there. And the pleasure potency, that Ladini Shakti, is further manifesting in all devotional service. So devotional service is there. And therefore it is said that the holy name is sometimes you hear these very complex explanations, you know, someone on the street asks you, what does it mean, this Maha Mantra? And we mumble something, well, Krishna is the all-attractive, supreme personality of Godhead, and Ladini Shakti, the internal potency, Hare is the internal potency, and then Ram is the pleasure potency, right? You know, and like this, we are hearing some explanations, but we can say it much more simple. Krishna means the all-attractive. Hare means the service rendered to him. And Ram is the happiness you get from it. That people can, if you say it like that, then people can understand it. They can pick it up, you know, in one. Oh, really? That's interesting, right? Yeah, you see the relationship, you know? Here he is, the all-attractive. You simply serve him, and you'll get the happiness. Krishna, the Hare, serve. Ram, the happiness. That is the result of it. So that is, and that is the reality. Of course, we can explain it a little more sophisticated also. Ramanti yogino nanti satchananda siddhatmani iti rama padena su param brahma vidiyate. We can explain that this happiness is the eternal happiness, which is the eternal happiness of the spiritual world. And that is not the temporary happiness of this world, but that it is the happiness connected to Param Brahma, to the Parabrahman, the Supreme Personality of God, who is the source of the Brahman, and so on. That we can understand. So that's, so we can explain so much about these different tattvas, about these different, three different tattvas. Then Prabhupada said that, yes, so in this way, Krishna is there, Balaram is there, and also Radharani is there. And of course also Gornitai are there, because Krishna, Krishna is non-different from Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Nityananda is non-different from Balaram. So Gornitai are also there in that holy name. And even Lord Ramachandra is there in that form of Ram. So like that, we are seeing that the holy name manifests within the holy name. The entire Dham is included. And within the Dham, the holy name is always there. Right? In the Dham, the holy name is always chanted. Everywhere. Constantly. Some chanting is there. And the Dham is the natural place to chant. Because what will we do in the holy Dham? The idea when you come to Vrindavan is to forget who you are or who you were. To forget who you were before you came to Vrindavan. It has absolutely no meaning who you were. Whether you were a big director, whether you were a big president, whether you were a big professor, whether you were a great scholar, whether you have a danda, or whether you have a PhD, or whether you are rich. Right? It all doesn't matter at all. In Vrindavan, simply, we are all servants of Krishna. Therefore, in Vrindavan, traditionally, we are not worshipping. We are not accepting so much worship. Even in the Zonal Acharya days, you know, when worship was like very opulent, still in Vrindavan the mood was, we got to keep it a little simple here. We got to tone down, got to keep it down. This is not the place where one takes much worship for himself. Because here Krishna is directly there. So the representative is pointing more towards Krishna. Of course, a great acharya like Prabhupada was certainly worshipped in Vrindavan and glorified in Vrindavan. The most wonderful thing was when Prabhupada had been preaching in the West and had been successful in creating a spiritual movement, and that then he came back to Vrindavan and that the Brijbasis honored him. That was a wonderful event. Many disciples were there and many people were there, and the Brijbasis had organized a special program to honor Prabhupada, and they all held different speeches. And they were all glorifying him for having done this wonderful work of spreading the culture of Vrindavan all over the world, right? And Prabhupada was kind of modestly smiling, but at the same time also very happy that he was with his own people who actually could understand what he had done, right? That now he was being appreciated by those who actually understood what he did and who actually could really appreciate what he did, right? who could fully understand what he did. So Prabhupada was like very happy. And at that time, in honor of Prabhupada, they erected this big arch, this like an Arc de Triomphe, a big gate over the road, the Prabhupada gate. And they renamed the road to Bhaktivedanta Swami Mark, where that the road leading into our temple. So it is still there today. Somehow or other, when I first came to Vrindavan, I came by that road on foot because I had come by train to Mathura, and someone told me that, oh, it's very close to Vrindavan, it's not far. So I thought, okay, I'll walk then. Yes, yeah. Can I walk it? They said, yes, yes, you can walk. Yeah, Indians can walk anything, you know. So I was walking and walking. And so I reached only in the evening. And when I came in the evening to Vrindavan, there were no cars, there were no people, the road was much more narrow than it's now. There were only cows, about 100 cows walking to Vrindavan. So I'm walking there, it's me and the cows going to Vrindavan, right? And I came to Vrindavan, and then there was this big gate, and I walked through this big gate. And it's like, and then I walked a little further, and there it already was. The first temple was the Krishna Balaram temple, right? And therefore, you know, I naturally wound up there and checked it all out. And I didn't know anything about what was going on or what was not going on. And it was evening, and they were just worshipping a plant. So I was just looking at it all, you know, I was like, my God, you know. And all these people were bowing down to a plant. So that was like a bit of a shock, you know. Right. And then this little albino pujari, very white, with reddish eyes, came out and blew a conch shell in my mind at the same time. Right. I came out of the altar, and then, okay, the altar doors opened and there were the deities. So, somehow or other, after that, I stayed for some time and went for some time and came back again, and somehow or other, at that time, Srila Prabhupada's Samadhi was only a small little, just like a little hut where you would put your bicycle. No bigger than that, a little square thing. And it had some atmosphere. It was simple, but it was also very intimate. And everyone would walk around it, you know, we'd like, after the kirtan, we would walk around. And it felt so much like Prabhupada's body is here. You know, now there's such a big temple that you can almost forget that Prabhupada is actually there. But when it was so small, you really felt like Prabhupada's body is very much here. And at least for me, that was a direct connection in a way, right? As direct as it got. So therefore, that samadhi meant a lot to me. And therefore, I never missed the Mangalartik in Prabhupada Samadhi. I still never miss, right, that Mangalartik. That meant a lot to me. And then after we were always chanting japa in Prabhupada's house. So how many years have I chanted japa in Prabhupada's house? So
In this way, these two places have for me also become like the most sacred places in all of Vrindavan, actually. And therefore, I cannot get myself to stay in Govardhan or in Radhakund or all these places. I just, you know, it's like, what can I do? Back to the Krishna Balaram Mandir, to Prabhupada's temple, and do some service there, as long as Krishna Balaram will allow me. What can we do? And we have the great challenge that Srila Prabhupada said that in Vrindavan there should be 25 Goswamis. There should be 25 Goswamis. In one letter he writes, and I always thought, as soon as I read that, that I have to be one of those. I gotta become one of those. So I'm still trying for it. I'm still trying. I want to become one of those 25 Goswamis of Vrindavan, who can be there in that. And that is required, that there are these very saintly personalities. If there are not very saintly personalities in that temple, then it will be very difficult. But if there are very strong saintly personalities, then that will create that atmosphere of which will unite everyone. And that is the only thing that can make this movement go forward, saintly personalities. So when I first came to Vrindavan, or in the beginning years I was in Vrindavan, I was very soon engaged in the restaurant to help serving prasadam. And I was serving prasadam, and then 1 week after I was there, the manager of the restaurant left, and so I became the manager. And it was very difficult because the cook spoke only Hindi and I didn't speak anything. So that was a big problem. Especially there was one who was just rolling chapatis like a machine. You know, and one day there were many people and we had ordered many chapatis and he was just rolling chapatis, and I came down. All the people had left and he was still rolling chapatis. So I just told him, you know, enough, no, stop. He didn't stop. So I tried different ways, you know, like with gestures and like, no, and he just wouldn't stop. So then finally, I grabbed his arm, right? And then he just attacked me with the hot chapati plate, which had a handle on it, you know, and I had to dive, you know. And then he screamed so that in no time, 50 people were there. 50 people came, and I was like, shocked what had happened. And then I had attacked him, I had beaten him, and the whole thing, you know. The guy made a big stink, right? So, okay, I had to pacify and this, that, you know. Anyway, I remembered that, you know. And later I took revenge and threw him out, I fired him, right, when I got the chance. What to do? But for some time I had to tolerate. So I was the manager. So then I lost my chapati cook, and then there was one devotee named Rohini Kumar. He was an old Prabhupada disciple from the 60s, right? From 67 or something like that, 68. Old devotee. Madhav Maharaj. And then he became Rohini Kumar again. And Madhurya Madhav Maharaj. And so Rohini Kumar, he was there and he became my cook. And he knew Hindi, he knew many languages because he had been in India already. And he was a linguist, you know. So he taught me some Hindi. And I asked him words and he was teaching. He was the chapati cook. But he was always sleeping on the bags of flour somewhere in a room. And then I had all these people upstairs, these Indians. And the Indians are too much. They have their cups, and there's no water, and they want water, and instead of saying, excuse me, could I have some water, they just bang their cups on the table, you know? Bang, empty cups. Bang, bang, bang. Water, pani! Bang, bang, pani! Yeah, they don't behave like nice hotel guests. It's like, and when you're Dutch, you know, your mood is like, go get it yourself, okay? You know? I'm not your dog, you know? Ik ben je hondje niet, right? That's like the Dutch mood in such regards. So it was very difficult for my Dutch false ego, you know. Bang, 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 party, party. It's like chapatis, 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 you know. They were like so diminished. So I was under heavy pressure from these people up. So I called down to the kitchen, chapatis, chapatis, you gotta get chapatis. No chapatis, you know. And then finally, you know, like after just no chapatis had come, suddenly Rohini Kumar jumped out of the door. The kitchen was down, and he jumped out of the door, and on his finger he had made the head of a joker out of chapati dough, and he put it under my nose, and it goes like up and down, and he says, no chapatis. I was lost for words. I'm not usually lost for words, not very quick, but this time I was lost for words. So what to do? So somehow or other, I was engaged in that service, in that restaurant, and was being purified. I don't know, I forgot now why I started this whole restaurant story. So I went for the illustration instead of sticking to the point. That's what you get. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So in this way, the service was not easy. There were many things that were a great struggle. You know, it's like you had to deal with in a totally different culture. The strangest things happened over the years. Later I became responsible for more things, and anything would happen sometimes. One day I was sitting in my office. I had an office, sitting in my office, and I hear a gurgling sound, you know, from the wall. That, you know, and the next moment there was like a whole bunch of water shooting out of the electric socket. And just like, don't ask me how this water had come in there, but somehow or other some broken water line had found its way through the electric lines, you know. And it came out of the electric socket. It's inconceivable. Inconceivable. So the things that could happen in India, that was like just, you know, just inconceivable. I mean, we had so many things, you know. There was someone from the Malik family. The Malik family was the family where Prabhupada had stayed in Calcutta, where he grew up. Prabhupada was, his family, the Day family, was a branch of the Malik family. And there was the temple of Radha Govinda in Calcutta. And one can go there today, because now we actually have Prabhupada's birth site. Right? And so not so long ago, we went there with Bhakti Charu Maharaj and I think many more, Gopal Krishna Maharaj and Jai Pataka Maharaj and many Maharajas and many others. We all went there to Prabhupada's birth site. So it's very nice. And there you can also see the house where Prabhupada stayed, and you can see all the property of the Malik family. So this Malik family is aristocratic and for ISKCON, of course, important, the family where Prabhupada came from. So they sent some boy from the Malik family to Vrindavan. And there's a letter coming with him, you know, please take care of him very well. And the next moment, so we give him a full tour, you know, the full tour. And we take him to the Yamuna, and within seconds, he goes under, and he doesn't come back up. He's gone, you know. And then eventually, okay, the body comes up, and he's drowned. He just drowned immediately. Enters the Yamuna and drowns, just like that, you know. I mean, so what to do, you know. So, okay, we rang up Calcutta, and they said, okay, okay. Of course, they're very shocked, and they said, whatever, you cannot dispose of the body until we come. So the family was coming, you know. So we had this body, and it was hot. We had to keep this body. So in the Gurukul building, which is described here, there's a garden in the middle. And in that garden, there's a fountain. So we decided to you know, take the water out of the fountain and to keep the body there on ice. So that's what we did. All these blocks of ice, lots of blocks of ice in there. So body on the rocks, you know, that's what it was, right? Just all like this, a big bed of ice and this dead body in there. And it was there for days, you know, and it began to smell more and more. And the whole building began to stink. And at one point there were 30 vultures sitting on the edge of the roof. What, looking at that body? 30 vultures sitting there waiting. You know, like, oh, boy. So, here we are. So Prabhupada, it is described here that the devotees had to accept hard work and austerity. Right? So I'm just giving some illustrations of what kind of things one might encounter, right, in that situation. And of course I could go on for hours and hours with such kind of stories, right? But that's also entertaining, but in itself, then we really lose the philosophical connection. So I want to go back a little bit more to the philosophy and say that in one sense, you know, all of ISKCON is quite a story, right? Quite a story.